Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. On this week's show, we're going to the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival with our house band, Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. We'll hear about the band's life on the road, in the studio, and their upcoming album, 2000 Days. We'll also go backstage with Ann Churchill, road chef for the Dave Matthews Band, who'll give us an in-depth look at what 21st century craft service is all about. Finally, Offbeat Magazine's Elsa Hahn takes us into the home kitchens of New Orleans' most famous musicians, as profiled in her new book, The Gravy. All this Jazz Fest fun, and you don't even have to buy a ticket. Just sit back and enjoy our Jazz Fest edition of Louisiana Eats. Versatility is the trademark of Chef Ann Churchill's business, Karma Kitchen. Ann's vegetarian and vegan creations are so delicious that even the most dedicated carnivores delight in every bite of her food. Highly sought after as a caterer, Ann Churchill can be often found at various food festivals and dishing up the Green Plate special at the Crescent City Farmers Market. Ann, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Thanks, Poppy. It's great to be here.
So how did food become your avocation?
Well, I always loved cooking, and it wasn't really an option as a career path, you know, when I was younger. And it was, you know, you'll go to college and you'll do this. And so I did, and taught high school for 6 years and worked in video production and did a number of things, worked in television for a while, and always loved cooking and thought, gosh, if I just... I would love to do that for a living, but it just didn't seem feasible. And then I was living in San Francisco and working for Make-A-Wish Foundation and ended up running a marathon and raising money for Team and Training. And I just had this epiphany while I was running, because it is a really interesting psychological thing that happens when you're running 26.2 miles. You have a lot of time to reflect. And these walls kind of broke down, and I just thought, well, being scared of stuff's just silly. And so I thought, if I wasn't scared of anything, what would I do? And I realized that I'd cook. So when I moved back here, I applied to Delgado and worked at Bourbon House as an apprentice when I was in the program, and worked at Bayona for Susan Spicer, which was amazing. And then just went out on my own. I already knew that I wanted to start a catering business. And right as I was starting, Kate and Jane from Bridge Lounge, the former owners, they gave me a call and they said, we really want to do food here. That was a great launching pad. And so I really owe them tremendously for that. It got my name out there and people could come in and taste my food. So after the storm, a kitchen became available, and a friend of mine bought the kitchen with the understanding that I would rent it in the Bywater. And it was right around the corner from my house. So set up shop there and just started feeding all the people who didn't have a kitchen anymore, and it just went from there. Did food at Bacchanal for a while, and...
Yeah, we never know where you're going to turn up next. That's the kind of girl you are.
I like to surprise people.
So, Ann, how did you and your food come to the attention of the Dave Matthews Band?
I was really fortunate. I already had a little bit of a working relationship with Piety Street Studios, and I live on Piety Street, so I knew them already. And they'd had my food. Got to cook for the River in Reverse, Elvis Costello and Alan Toussaint, when they recorded. I got to feed them, which was really exciting.
Yeah.
And so there was already a precedent there. And I was at a Christmas party at the Country Club, and Sean Hall said, we might have a band coming in that might need a caterer, and we can't tell you who it is yet. I'm thinking, big band? I'm like, Rolling Stones? What? You know?
Yeah.
And they said they might want to bring in their own chef. They haven't decided, but we're trying to tell them they should use you. And I was like, well, worst case scenario, some chef comes in, I rent out my kitchen.
Yeah.
But I thought it would be really fun to cook for whoever this mysterious entity is. And so I was in the kitchen washing my dishes one day, and I get a call, you know, This is Cara from Dave Matthews Band, and my knees went to rubber.
Yeah, I bet.
And can you send us some menus? And so I did and started cooking for them. And it was a really, they stayed here for several months and really did.
Which album were they working on?
This was Big Whiskey and the Grugrux King, which Big Whiskey is New Orleans. And the Grugrux King is a reference to Leroy, the band member who passed away. So it was a tribute to him in a sense. And he loved New Orleans. So they decided, what a great idea to record here and, you know, support New Orleans in the aftermath of that man-made disaster.
So you send off your suggested menus, and do they pick and choose, or do they start to tweak what they want from you right away?
They just wanted a feel for what I did. So it was more, oh, she gets it. She'll be able, you know, do the kind of food that we want. So I didn't have to stick to any. I got to make it up every day and have fun. So I got to go to the market and see what was really nice and see what fish purveyors had really nice fish. And so it was really fun. But as a party chef, I didn't have the giant repertoire because, you know, I'd have a bunch of different things I did. But I didn't have to come up with 3 different entrees every single night and to not repeat them. So that got to be really interesting and fun and sometimes challenging. Like, what am I going to feed them tonight? Oh, my gosh.
How did it then occur that they said, come on, Ann, let's go?
Well, I was setting up one night and someone said something about a tour chef. And I said, what's a tour chef? And they said, oh, those are the chefs that travel around and cook for us. And I said, that's a job. And I think I said a couple of expletives, too, involving kidding me.
Yeah, I bet.
And they said, you'd be interested? And I said, well, yeah. And I was, you know, newly single and just thought, I could pick up and take off for months at a time. Sure. And so they made a call and I started working for their catering team, so which is 4 chefs and a front of house dining room person and a crew chief and then someone else who handles stocking the dressing rooms and stocking all the buses and that sort of thing.
Wow. Okay, well, walk us through exactly how this works. You go on the road with the band. So where are you doing the cooking?
Well, we have in our rider that is advanced to the venue. This is the summer tour. The summer tour is outdoors. They're an amphitheater, so we're outdoors. So they're supposed to provide us with a tent of certain diameter, and then they have to provide us with refrigeration. They provide us with tables, and they provide us with a few prep cook dishwasher people, which on a good day, they're very competent, and on a bad day,
you're washing the dishes.
Sometimes we have to jump in, and that's a bad day is when we have to jump in and wash dishes. We set up the tables and set up the refrigerators, and some things are pre-shopped for breakfast. So the lead chef goes out to the store and buys stuff for lunch and dinner. The remaining 3 of us show up and get everything ready. Then all these road cases come off of a truck with 3 convection ovens, pots, pans, an entire pantry, a whole front of house with chafing dishes and a giant coffee case. And it's pretty amazing the amount of equipment. And so all that comes out. We set up and organize the kitchen, get power from the venue, set up our ovens. And then we crank out breakfast for about 85 people and keep that going. And then the lead chef shows up, Fiona, and we unload everything and talk about lunch and then crank out lunch and then as soon as lunch is out, we talk about dinner and keep lunch going while we get dinner ready and crank dinner out for 5 o'clock. And then that goes till 8 or 8:30. How quickly I forget.
and then
we pack everything up and
move
get on
the
bus and do it again. Yeah.
Wow. So were there any disasters?
Well, there was this one weather situation in Canandaigua. The setup they had for us was not ideal, and there was a giant lightning and thunderstorm, and it was getting water in our cases and blowing things over, and
Oh, man.
We couldn't set up everything, and so we had to wing it, and I basically found a little alcove inside and cranked out breakfast while the guys outside tried to wrestle, you know, with flying tarps and all of that. So that was pretty intense. You know, it's the same with catering or with restaurants as well. It's just you think you're not going to pull it off, and then all of a sudden you're like, I can't believe I just pulled that off again. So there's a lot of that.
Yeah, that's the food secret. So in all your travels with the band, were there any favorite venues that you worked?
There are a few that I really like, but one of my favorites is called Shoreline in San Francisco, and it has all of these Bill Graham Presents old structures from the crazy big parties and concerts and the Grateful Dead shows. So it's great photo ops. There's like a big skull. There's this giant earth that I have a picture of me hanging from it. So that one's really fun. And you get, you know, the West Coast, it's beautiful access to all that produce in the San Joaquin Valley. And
Oh, yeah.
That's also an added bonus.
When you're cooking in Eden, it's always easy.
Exactly.
And have you come up with any strange stipulations that the band requires? You know, I've heard these rumors about, like, no brown M&Ms. What's the deal with that?
So the deal is, not so much now because most of the venues are established, but when the first big rock concerts were happening indoors, it created some logistical issues, and the stakes are really high with rigging and setting up equipment and power sources and whether equipment could actually be brought in through the doors. So the tour managers would send out these riders that the venues were supposed to read and follow to the T. And so if the tour manager came in and saw that they hadn't sorted out the M&Ms, then they knew they hadn't read the rider, and they'd often put those towards the end. So they'd know that they hadn't read to the end of the rider and that probably their day was going to suck because the promoter hadn't really done their job. Yeah. So that's really the reason for it. It wasn't prima donna rock stars.
Oh, that's great to know. I'm so relieved. So do you have any really special road memories you want to share with us?
Gosh, well, some of them I probably can't talk about.
Okay.
But I mean,
but other than that,
but people think that it's this crazy lifestyle, and it's an intense job where you're working 15 hours a day. So I think it's a lot tamer than people assume, and people assume it's a party every night, and it's a lot more tame, but occasionally there'll be a bus party that's really great where a bunch of people just hang out on one of the buses, and there's lots of music, and there's dancing, and
how many buses are there in the caravan?
Oh, gosh. Between 8 and 11, depending on. The winter tour was bigger, and we had more equipment and more people, so that had more buses. But that's
between 8 and 11.
Wow. A lot of buses. Yeah.
Yeah, that's almost like a train on the road.
Well, catering has its own bus, so because there's enough of us, and then there's usually one other person on our bus. And then the band members each have their own bus at this point. So the main band members. So.
Oh, my gosh. They each have their own bus. My goodness gracious. So tell me, you hear stories about road burnout for the rock stars. Do the rock star chefs get road burnout?
Oh, definitely. It's an intense job. It's hard on the body. It can be a little hard on the liver. And you're in close confines with a lot of people. I mean, you're living on a bus with seven other people, and you work with them for 15 hours a day, and then you're hanging out with them at night. So no matter, I mean, I love all of them, but sometimes, you know, you just really want to go be by yourself for a little while.
Yeah. So are you going back out on the road anytime soon?
Yes. Going out after Jazz Fest.
Cool.
Yeah.
With Dave Matthews?
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. Thanks so much for giving us this behind-the-scenes look at the boys in the band.
Well, thanks for having me, Poppy.
Ann Churchill of Karma Kitchen and road chef for the Dave Matthews Band.
Still here dancing with the Ku Klux Klan. We'll be drinking big whiskey while we dance and sing. And when my story ends, it's gonna end with him. Heaven or hell, I'm going there with the Ku Klux Klan.
Louisiana Eats culinary heritage heroes are farmers, fishers, chefs, and food producers who bring an authentic taste of our state's heritage to the world's tables. This week's hero is a fourth-generation sausage maker with Jazz Fest in his blood.
They basically asked my dad to make some po' boys. He'd wrap them up in foil at the restaurant, and he would bring them out to the booth. My dad used to say there were more musicians walking around that festival than there were patrons, but it was they had an air at that first festival. It was, I think the people that were there knew that this was something special.
Although he had a corporate job lined up with Kraft General Foods after graduation, our hero decided to come home and go to work with his dad in the family business.
Having a generational business that keeps going and going, it's rare. I made the decision to go back, to come back home, and really give it a try. Now, of course, working with my dad was, let's say, being baptized by fire, because if we didn't argue or fuss every day, I thought something was wrong. But it was a part of that whole concept of theory from college that I learned, and his many years of just hands-on learning and trial and tribulation.
His decision to return as the fourth generation of his family's sausage business was one he never regretted.
7 years that I had working side by side with him before he had his heart attack were some of the greatest years I had, because I realized after he left that I didn't have that time coming up because he worked all the time. And then having those 7 years of arguing with him every day, he was training me. He was toughening my skin. He was getting me ready.
At the time of his dad's sudden death, the father-son team had worked hard to secure a major new contract for their business.
Well, he had his heart attack right outside of Ochsner. They had about 7 orderlies and different people to pick him up and get him to the emergency room because he was quite a large man. And there was a moment in there where when they came in and they told me, that's when I knew you got to have to step up. And so that night, I spent the night with my mom at the home. It was just she and I, and we were laying in the bed together, just looking at the ceiling, talking and trying to figure out what we were going to do. And she says, well, what are you going to do? I says, well, knowing my dad, I got to get up at 5 and go start loading these trucks. We worked so hard on this contract. I said, I can't let this stop. So it wasn't any morning time for me. I walked in there, all the people that were waiting for me. I said, well, you know, Sonny's not coming. He passed yesterday. I says, but knowing him, we got to keep this going. So I opened up the door to the factory. I broke down and cried for about 5 minutes, wiped my tears, and we started loading the trucks, and the rest is history.
That's why Vance Bokrasan is this week's Louisiana Eats Culinary Heritage Hero, brought to you with support by Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. If you're planning a visit to this year's Jazz and Heritage Festival, save room for a Bokrasan hot sausage poor boy, because that's real Louisiana Eats. Louisiana Eats house band Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes are debuting their new album, 2000 Days, at Jazz Fest this year. Stay tuned to hear all about what fuels the band, both in the studio and on the road. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. Our Louisiana Eats roving reporter, Frank McManus, is always hunting out authentic Louisiana Eats experiences for us on the road. So, Frank, where are we going today?
Well, we're going to go a little northwest of Lafayette to the frog capital of Louisiana and perhaps the world, Rain, Louisiana, to a place called Hawk's Crawfish. They proudly identify themselves as being located in the middle of nowhere. But once you've made the trek out there, it's so worth it. They hand select the crawfish for size and then use a unique purging method that was apparently developed at Texas A&M that keeps these enormous hand selected crawfish in a slowly moving oxygenated freshwater bath for 24 hours or more, and it winds up really, really cleaning the crawfish out. So the flavor of the meat is really, really pops out. The fat that's in there is just an iridescent yellow. I mean, it almost has the texture of a little lobster tail. They're just incredible crawfish.
Delicious. Well, tell me, Frank, what is the flavor profile of their spice blend like?
They don't tend to go super overboard with spiciness, so the cayenne is sort of toned down. Their real emphasis is on the crawfish and the process that they go through. to clean them up. So they really try and make it so that the crawfish themselves are the center of the dining experience. Now, of course, they're boiling them with lemons and garlic and cayenne and some of the more traditional stuff. I think that there's probably some nutmeg in there, black pepper, of course, salt. But they really tone it down. That allows the singular quality of these crawfish to come through. But under normal circumstances, they're open Wednesday through Sunday. And Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday, it's just for dinner from 5 to 9. And Friday and Saturday, they're open a little bit later. And it's presented very simply. That's a real unpretentious sort of a place. You know, you can also get the fried crawfish, crawfish etouffee, fried shrimp platters, that sort of thing. But if you're going to make the trek, I definitely would recommend someone in the party getting the crawfish. You'll be blown away once you get there. It's a rural, isolated gem.
Well, I know it's the crawfish mecca, so I hope all our Louisiana Eats eaters make it out there this year for crawfish season, since now you've given them this great reminder that it's time to go.
Sounds good, Poppy. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Frank McMahon's our Louisiana Eats roving reporter. Louisiana Eats listener, then you're already familiar with our house band, Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. The boys in the band are just about to debut their latest CD, 2000 Days, and they're here to discuss just what fuels their music. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, Poppy.
So let's start off. Please introduce yourselves and let us know, what do you play in the band?
My name is Johnny Sketch, and I am the guitarist, cellist, and lead vocalist for the band.
I am David Pomerleau, Electric Dave, and I'm a bass player.
My name is Dirty Johnny. Some people call me Andre. And I play the drums, and I sing backup vocals.
Okay. So, first of all, how long did it take you to produce this new CD?
The CD has been being written for most of the last 2,000 days, really, which is thus the title.
Hence the name.
Right, exactly. But really just to make the record, it all began with getting the funds together, and that had a lot to do with this new thing called Kickstarter, which has really been amazing for a lot of musicians and artists to get their projects off the ground. Sometimes you just don't have the funds available to get going. Studio time isn't cheap, and if you want to do it right, you really need help. So once we got that put together, and people really amazingly stepped up and put up a lot of money generously, and we, within a month, we're ready to make a record. So that was
Mark,
the beginning of it.
I imagine there's a bunch of people who probably have never even heard of Kickstarter.
Right.
So would you explain what that is?
Yeah, sure. I'm not even sure that it's been around for all that long. I mean, I know it's been around for a few years now, but it's basically a website where you can sign up your project or whatever your idea is, be it some art project or trip as a student. I mean, there's all sorts of things you can do. But essentially what you do is you put your idea on the website. People can go and look through them and decide if they want to make a donation to contribute to, like in our case, making a record. And what we do in return is we offer them incentives. Like, for example, at a certain level, we'll send you get a copy of the CD before we sell it to anybody, and you get a poster that's a limited edition thing. It's a lot like actually public radio when you guys do your sponsorship drives.
That's
people
a great
put up
analogy.
The money in advance, and then in return, you get sort of preferential treatment or whatever you
and
want to call
it. And we get to decide what the incentives are. So I think one of them, maybe at the $700 level, $500 level, we offered to have you over to one of our houses and make dinner for you.
Oh, I'm so glad you didn't tell him I was going to cook dinner. Thank
no, we
you.
Did.
We
did.
We have to write 3 or 4 songs that for
really?
A certain amount, we said
yeah,
we would write and perform a song for you.
It was so much fun, too. We haven't done them all yet, but the first one we did as like a demo was hilarious. I mean, I want to put it in our set. It's so funny when you get someone's name and you're like, okay, Jessica. What are we going to say to Jessica? Thanks for your money.
No, it has to be a little better than that.
Well, you'd think that, Poppy, but it really isn't much better.
It's already sold millions in Japan.
That's right. Gosh. Jessica, thank you for your money is huge in Scandinavia.
So, this is a food show, remember?
Let's talk about food.
So, when you all were spending those 10-hour days in the studio, what were you eating and drinking?
This is a perfect time because our other records would have been not as fun an answer, but Tracy Freeman had the genius idea to stop at Dornak's on the way to the studio every day and buy like 3 loaves of po' boy bread and Scherzese ham, pastrami,
all the in-house meats from the deli counter.
Right, this sliced Swiss tomatoes, lettuce. I mean, it was the most genius idea because all the, you know, po' boy, you want a little guy, you make a little guy.
Yeah.
You want
you're
the
really
full
hungry?
Foot long, go to work.
That's
you know,
the way I do it.
And it was a great way to take a break. You go in and build a sandwich.
Fueled by Dornak's.
We really, really should have gotten
and we're not
an endorsement.
Sponsored
from
by
that.
Them at all. They've done nothing. But it was really cool. And I'm a big sandwich fan. They call me Captain Sandwich. So I was in heaven every day making up sandwiches. We had egg salad, we had tuna salad. But the po' boy thing was absolutely genius. I would recommend it to anybody making a record. It was great. And it was actually pretty cost effective, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so too.
Yeah.
Well, I've been wanting to do this interview, quite honestly, since last summer when I got the wackadoodle email that you sent me, Mark, that said, Poppy, help. We're in Pensacola and we really want bread pudding, but all we have is a whole lot of Krispy Kreme donuts.
No, they weren't. Yes. Just to clarify, they weren't Krispy Kremes. They were from the Donut Hole in Destin, Florida. And we eat there every time we go. And the woman, it was like 3 a.m. after the gig, she's throwing away these giant bags of donuts. I just couldn't look him in the eye and not ask her. I said, are you going to throw those out? Because we'll take them. She gave us, I mean, I don't know, what do we have, like 200 donuts? We had like 200 donuts. It was a watershed moment in my life, Poppy.
Okay, so how'd the bread pudding turn out?
It was amazing. It was so good.
It's all about the sauce.
It's all about the whiskey.
Really.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, it was excellent. I mean, we never fail to eat well in Destin. Speaking of food, that's one of the places.
And it's such a different thing in the studio. You want to be working most of the time, so it's just quick sandwiches in the kitchen, back in the studio. With the road, you have a 4-hour show and maybe 2-hour sound check, and the rest of the day you don't have anything to do besides travel. So we do get a little more creative with restaurants and stuff when we're on the road.
Well, we used to do in our old van. Our old van's name was Murph.
Uh-huh.
She treated us very well for many years. So we used to have the Murph Special. That's a great sandwich. So the Murph Special, a lot of times I would make the sandwiches and pass them back. So I got to know, like,
no mayonnaise.
No tomatoes for David.
No tomatoes for
everything for Mark.
It's basically just a cheese sandwich, right?
Genetic.
It's just a cheese
sandwich, but there were, you know, we'd put cucumber and tomato and
sprouts.
Mm-hmm. A lot of veggies.
So when you're traveling, and I know you've been back to a bunch of the same places at the same time, yeah. Any particular spots besides the donut hole that
stand
out?
We're going to need another show for
this one. One of the places I wanted to mention is the Cookout, which they have out in North Carolina.
Yeah.
But it's cheap and it's real good, and it really tastes like somebody who's out back cooking on a little tiny grill.
It's greasy spoon.
Yum.
What's the place in Baltimore that has all
the Abbey?
The Abbey has.
You always go to the Abbey, yeah.
All
it's like
kinds
a
of
gourmet
different meats.
Burger place.
Yeah, for burgers.
Last time I was there, I had kangaroo.
Kangaroo.
They've had crocodile, elk.
Oh, my God.
Ostrich. Always have
the
turkey.
Abbey
always have bison.
In Baltimore?
Mm-hmm. It's a little tiny place in an alley in the Federal Hill area, right by the 8x10 where we play.
Strangely enough, the best Philly cheesesteak I've had was not in Philadelphia. We had many in Philadelphia. Ooh. It's in Key West, Florida.
You're going to get in trouble.
But the guys
from
Philadelphia's defense, the guys that run that place are in Key West. Mr. Z's in Key West.
Mr. Z's in Key West has the best Philly cheesesteak I've had.
We've probably spent half the money we've made in Key West at Mr. Z's. Because it's good pizza. I mean, you wouldn't think it's
really. It's open until like 5 a.m.
Yep. They're always grumpy, but just enough.
Just enough.
So I know that, you know, the guys who are in the major leagues, where I know you all are going as soon as you get this Grammy,
exactly.
Like they send riders ahead.
Yeah,
where,
we've heard of those.
Yeah. So you all have any special requirements? Like do you even beg for water? What do you do?
We need water and a case of beer.
Okay.
Yeah, and we don't even specify what kind of beer. But you'd be surprised how many gigs we show up and they've put like 20 little cups of water on the stage, and that's our allowance. Like, I don't think we're not Journey or anything, but give, I mean, you can't get a case of water.
I can't get a bottle of, a whole
I
bottle
I know, a
for
whole
myself.
Bottle of water for me. Dave and I are sharing one. It gets real awkward.
Oh, that's
you know?
Nasty.
And it's nothing we mind too much, because in a lot of the cities we go, we know people who are dying to feed us. It's my favorite side effect of playing music is people want to feed the band.
That's true.
So who's feeding you on the road?
Just friends we've met, friends who have moved out of New Orleans.
Oh, do them a favor. Like, drop their names and tell me
what
they
cook. Our
friend
Jab Wilson and Destin is one of the meanest. He gets that fresh Destin fish and knows what to do with it.
The Wolfson family in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Well, a lot of places we go to, you know, even if they don't cook, people are anxious to take us out to eat at whatever place they think is great.
Uh-huh.
I can think of just recently, again, in Key West, we were staying with the Fowlers. After these guys left, I got taken out to this place. It was like the Rusty Anchor or something. It was so perfectly Key West. It was way off the beaten path. It was all locals, and it could not have been any better. I mean, I was in heaven. It was like red and white checkered tablecloths. They haven't decorated since the 60s, and it was just so good. You know,
that's great.
But people are – I think Dave's right. I mean, that's one of the nice things about being in the group is people know that it's not fun to be eating a Subway sandwich every time you stop for gas. We want some real food, and people are really sensitive to that, and they take us out to really cool places wherever we go.
I know that sometimes some of your lyrics – include some food words.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about some of your food music.
Dre, this,
well,
is, this
I've,
is all about
I've
Dre.
Said for years, and this is with a lot of truth to it, that I would say that 40% of the reason I want to be in a touring band is to sample the world's biscuits and gravy. I think my enthusiasm for biscuits and gravy has certainly spread. I'm not alone in this band and in my love of B&G, as we like to call them.
Flamingos had
Flamingo
some of the best,
in
closed.
Key West again, though.
They're
Key West
closed.
Comes through for us.
No
they
longer.
Had top five biscuits and gravy. It was tremendous, but they're closed now. Was,
any other food songs?
Sweet Chalmette has food.
Talk about mac and cheese.
Rocky and Carlos. It's an allusion to Rocky and Carlos. I don't actually say Rocky and Carlos, but
it's a nod to them.
It's a nod to the mac. If you say Chalmette and mac and cheese, I think everybody knows what you mean.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So tell me, you go to all sorts of venues and you see all sorts of things out there. And we talked with Ann Churchill, who is a local caterer. And Ann travels on the road with the Dave Matthews Band. And she just told us like the most crazy, like 11 buses and a truck just for the food equipment.
Wow.
And yeah, like really big. So what of that sort of the big time have you guys ever rubbed up against?
We've come close at a few festivals. That's usually the biggest, the closest they'll let us get to it. We've been to the Telluride Blues and Brews Festival. It was a great one. They were so cool with the artists. Didn't matter if you were the headliner, the Black Crows, or us. Everybody got these big laminates, and they treated us like gold. I mean,
massages,
the food was amazing.
Massages!
Food.
Sunday
drink,
morning, everybody
unlimited.
Had their own bottle of champagne for mimosas.
Yeah. They had unlimited microbrew beer. It was wonderful. But other festivals as well. Like, I remember Voodoo here in town was great. They fed us really well. And actually, they weren't even picky about you could go back and eat throughout the day after you'd finished. You know, sometimes the festivals do a really good job of just saying, if you're an artist and you're here to play, we're going to kind of all treat you the same. That's the best we ever get. And I think most artists and performers would
agree.
And
also
that's really
some
how it works,
some you know? Venues are just very professional, no matter who you are. The Belly Up in Aspen, I think, was one of our favorite pre-show meals. They sat us down, put the big serving dishes out, and it was just amazing.
Like the employee meal at a nice restaurant.
Yeah, it was like,
you know,
salmon.
It's gonna be
they
a
had
good
mixed
meal.
Green, like really good mixed green salad. It was good eating.
Very
for
nice.
Sure.
And then, I mean, you appreciate that because you see the opposite so much. You know, you really remember. I mean, the fact that I'm mentioning Belly Up today, that was
2007.
I mean, that was a long time ago.
Well, and even at, you know, like Dave said at one point, he knew that we had made it when we played at Tipitina's here in town.
Yeah.
And we had Popeyes waiting for us.
They put Popeyes
that
chicken.
Was huge.
That's a big step at Tipitina's,
that was huge.
Really. And the locals will know what I'm talking about. If you go backstage and they've got the 20-piece mixed or whatever and the sides, It's not necessarily the best game fuel. I'm not going to say it's good to eat a couple of wings and thighs.
But you feel like a rock star.
But it is so nice
to have
a
certain level of success.
Yeah, it like fuels you up
like
a rock star.
Any gig at Tipitina's, when you come back at set break, all the other people upstairs have eaten all of it. So you better eat as much as you can before it's gone.
That's right.
Well, I just want to congratulate you guys again on this new CD, 2,000 Days. And thank you so much for making the time to come talk with us on Louisiana Eats. And, guys, I can't ever say thank you enough for the theme music.
Thank you, Poppy.
It's our pleasure. Thanks a lot for having us.
Thanks, Poppy.
Mark Paradis, David Pomerleau, and Andre Boren of Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. When we come back from the next short break, we'll visit some of New Orleans' most famous musicians in their own home kitchens with Offbeat Magazine's Elsa Hahn. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Rouse's Markets. Most restaurants, particularly of the old school variety, are often reluctant to share recipes. Not so at the Bon Ton Cafe. Second-generation owners Debbie and Wayne Pierce have always been generous with the recipes at their culinary jewel, located on Magazine Street in downtown New Orleans. It's fairly easy to find a copy of the famous Bon Ton Cafe bread pudding, but their crawfish jambalaya recipe has never appeared in print. Of course, the crawfish etouffee and bisque there are divine, but one of my favorite dishes is the Bon Ton Cafe crawfish jambalaya. Recently, I asked Wayne Pierce for the recipe, and he walked me through how it's made. First, onion and green onions are sautéed together in margarine. Yes, I said margarine. I'm the last of the great butter lovers, but I learned the importance of using margarine to authentically replicate the taste of post-World War II recipes in Judy Walker's book, Cooking Up a Storm. If you want to recapture a favorite taste memory, you've got to use what the recipe calls for, even if things like canned ingredients and margarine offend your modern sensibilities. Now, back to the recipe. Once the onion and green onions become translucent, stir in fresh Louisiana crawfish tails, cooking it all together for about 5 minutes. Then, toss in cooked rice and fresh chopped parsley, along with some salt and pepper to taste. Your crawfish jambalaya has to rest for 3 to 5 minutes before serving to marry together all that delicious taste. And that's it. For a copy of this recipe and many others, visit our website at wwno.org. I'm Poppy Tooker. And the crawfish jambalaya from the Bon Ton Cafe is real Louisiana Eats. Elsa Hahn is a writer, photographer, and the very talented art director and food editor of Offbeat Magazine. Her new book, The Gravy, In the Kitchen with New Orleans Musicians, is a delightful compilation of 4 years of her popular column, The Gravy. So, Elsa, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Thank you.
Where did you come here from?
I grew up in Sweden, in both the Stockholm area and northern Sweden, close to the Arctic Circle, which is quite the different climate from New Orleans. And then I went to college both in Stockholm and in France. I lived in France for 3 years. I studied wine there, among other things. And then I was so lucky to get a scholarship to go to NYU through the Sweden America Foundation. So I went to New York City, and ate my way through Manhattan and Brooklyn. And it was just awesome to get to experience that city. But after 3 years, I was pretty much ready to move back to France or back to Sweden or just leave New York, because it felt like I could stay there forever and be happy, but my life would always be the same.
And so how did you come to New Orleans?
Because I was hungry.
Okay.
I was hungry for a different reality and for something that felt more real and down to earth. And it was just the perfect place. I fell in love with the city the second I came here. And then I went back to New York after a couple of weeks, booked another ticket to come right back down. And I had an engagement. I had to go work for a Swedish newspaper that summer. But then as soon as that was over, I was here again.
Well, we're glad you're here. And I found a million different surprises between the covers of The Gravy. So tell me, when you were working on the book, what surprised you the most?
I think as a non-musician myself, I work for a music magazine for Offbeat, but as a non-musician, music is kind of this mystery to me, what it takes to be a musician, how it works, how do you create music and how do you play with other people? How do you create that harmony and that balance? And how do you know when to put yourself forward and or when to pull back or mm-hmm. all those things that are kind of always been a mystery to me. Food has never been a mystery to me. So talking to musicians about food and cooking sort of gave me some insight into the fact that music is a lot like food. And the process, the creative process that these musicians put into their music is very much mirrored in the way they cook and create recipes and also bring other people to work with them.
What was it like going into the private homes and kitchens of these very public figures?
It was fascinating to see another side of them. Everyone was, you know, pretty much as I expected, but it was just very interesting to get just a richer view on them as people, as regular people. A lot of these musicians are on stage, and for someone sitting in the audience, they're up there performing. They're very public and exposed, and they're doing their thing, and you have, you know, access to them that way. But many of them are still very private. And there's definitely a difference between being at the front of the stage and being in the foreground or being a rhythm player in the back. And some of them are kind of shy.
Well, when you spent that time with them in their kitchens, did any of them break into song?
The one that did absolutely was the rapper Mystical.
Uh-huh.
Who we had to go on a couple of trips to Walmart because we forgot. there were items forgotten. There was no list, and there were items forgotten. So we had to go back for cornmeal, and we had to go back for baking soda, and we had to go back for a couple of things. And in the van on the way there and back, he would just break into song. He would just turn on a track, and then he would rap over it, and it included me and the cornmeal and fish grease and all kinds of things that he would just take out of the air, basically, which was just amazingly impressive, I thought.
I really loved it that some of these ingredients in the book are so unusual, you felt the need for this disclaimer. I quote, "Please leave roadkill by the roadside. And be careful where you get your raccoons." Now, why was that necessary?
Because since the book is just as much about the stories as it is about the recipes, I wanted to leave everything as intact as possible. And we have a couple of stories in the book that talk about raccoons.
Uh-huh.
And Monk Boudreau tells this really, you know, charming story about learning how to musk the coons. I didn't see him musk a coon, but he was trying to explain to me how to find them and, you know, the little glands that secrete whatever it is that they secrete, and about the size of a half of a fingernail, and you just locate them and you cut them out. And he learned this from a stranger down on Rampart Street.
Only in New Orleans. Yeah, there was a sign that said coons for sale or something.
Yeah,
huh?
And he just walked up there and kind of stared, I guess. And this gentleman, you know, asked him, "Do you know how to musk these?" And of course, he didn't, being a youngster. And the man was very happy to bring him out back and show him.
Well, I was very glad that you shared that little bit of food lore and actually food fact with us all. And Dr. John also seems to have a really big thing for raccoons. And your first photo in the book shows his freezer. And you claim that what is inside are two small squirrels, the back strap of a small white-tailed doe, an elk roast, duck, wild shallots, chickpeas, chicken feet, and then something you identify as ground meat from a sacred ceremony. Now, my freezer has a lot of obscure mystery ingredients in it, too, but these things in Dr. John's freezer, were they labeled like this?
Most of them were not labeled, but Wallace, who lives with Mac, took out everything in that freezer, more or less, and turned it over a couple of times, told me what it was, and then put it back. So I got a pretty good inventory of everything that was in there. And they had just been at a voodoo ceremony on the North Shore. And, you know, of course, you know, when people travel far to do these things, you have to eat, and meat happens. And that's where they got their ground meat.
Speaking of the photographs, the book has over 200 of them. I mean, it's really beautiful. And I understand most of them are yours. So how did you acquire the rest?
Well, I had something to work from since I had the series in Offbeat. But usually, you know, being a magazine, you can only fit so much on a page. So usually it was just one photo. And so when I wanted to put the book together, when I was sure that that's the direction I wanted to go in to assemble all these portraits, I wanted to complete the picture a little bit with more elements pertaining to the music and the fact that these people are musicians, because Offbeat being a music magazine, the music angle is kind of there without saying. Mm-hmm. But as a freestanding book, I really wanted to include photos of their instruments, of them performing their music in and around New Orleans, festivals, clubs. And I wanted to just have some more visual clues as to their musical existence as well as their kitchen life.
Now, I think hands down, okay, we've covered a lot of my favorite topics that were in the book, but my favorite story is about Sun Pie Barnes, who is, of course, the famous Zydeco musician whose day job is working as a National Park Service ranger. Now, Elsa, tell us the story of Sun Pie's love for little birds.
Well, he went to college in a biology class, and they were studying birds. And the teacher was very impressed because Sun Pie knew the name of all of these birds that none of the other students had ever maybe heard about or seen before. And he asked Sun Pie, how come you're so good at these birds? And Sun Pie looks at him and says, well, I've eaten every one of them.
Now, how did that happen? When was he eating little birds?
He grew up in Arkansas and just in the woods and hunting with, you know, friends and family. He started to pick off the songbirds, and he could tell me which ones were good in which sauce. And
and I understand that his great love is for the robin.
Yes, absolutely. So that's another very interesting music food connection, is hearing the song and making the dish.
That is just wild. Well, Elsa, I love the book. I love your column. And I just want to tell you, keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
Elsa Hahn, Offbeat Magazine's art director and food editor, author of the new book, The Gravy. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, author Paul Greenberg gets us ready for shrimp season.
You know, people always make the mistake of confusing seafood with land food or sea wildlife with land wildlife. You know, they'll say bluefin tuna is almost extinct. Well, there's still millions of bluefin tuna out there, but there used to be many, many more. What we're talking about is the loss of a food system when things become too rare to the point where they're called commercially extinct.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org.
Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan and Company, Leitzegen and Westside Leitzegen Funeral Homes, LCI Workers' Comp, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Kitchen and Culture Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to producer and sound engineer Thomas Walsh. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.